today's speaker is among the best, I think. I've seen Larry Stiebel speak in the past, not on this topic, but I've seen him speak very effectively. Larry is principal of, I'll probably get this wrong, Stiebel Peabody?
Yep.
Which is a boutique outplacement and executive coaching group in Newton and in Boston. We talked about various topics, and he's capable of speaking of many, many things. One of the topics I've been trying to find someone to speak to us about is keeping an even keel emotionally and physically during the long job search. I think it's a very important topic. I've had a very hard time finding that, and with Larry, I think we've done that. Larry has been at this business for a long time. He's very successful. He has a PhD in psychology, and I look forward to hearing from him. Larry Stiebel.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John. I also want to thank Eric Ross for setting this up. And I want to acknowledge Pete Pulsiver. And Pete and I have not seen each other since the last century, I think. And Pete was a client of mine way back when. So it's just great to see Pete. I'm a licensed doctoral level psychologist. I'm a co-founder of two companies, and I specialize in leadership and careers. Today we're going to be talking about your health and how to manage a job search, particularly a long job search, and dealing with health issues. And these are some of the issues we're going to be talking about. I'm taping this, and then I'm going to be sending it to John for distribution to you. If any of you would want it sooner, you just give me your business cards or put your name and email on a slip of paper. I'll be glad to send this to you, plus the PowerPoints. Here's an image that I think reminds me of many of the clients that I work with. They have become world-class canoeists or kayakers, doing a certain thing in a certain way over the years. And this kayaker is heading towards the horizon, and it really looks nice and peaceful and calm. And when it gets to that spot of the horizon, this is what it's going to find. It's not the horizon, it's a waterfall. And you're going over the waterfall. And and this is what my clients are like when they get the news that they've been terminated. Not only are they shocked, surprised, hurt, upset, but most importantly, many of the instinctive things that they have learned to do will work against them. The most, how many of you are in accounting and finance? Only one, amazing. Well, two, you know, typical in accounting and finance, you learn to comply with generally accepted accounting principles. You learn to comply. You learn to follow best, any HR people in the room? Okay, so you, HR, you learn, what's the best practice? We follow best practices. We comply with regulations, and we're gonna be okay. Then you get into this job search mode, and the game is called product differentiation. It's essentially a marketing exercise, and all of your instincts of compliance is out the window. So how do you go against your own instincts? How do you go? So that's, we wrote a book called Navigating the Waterfall. You can get it on Amazon.com. There is a chapter in that book that I would recommend to some of you. I have noticed there seem to be a number of you who are over the age of 40. That's just a guess. Just a guess. And there's a chapter in the book on dealing with the albatross around your neck. The albatross around your neck, for many of you, is age. But it could also be physical handicap. Or it could be that you stay too long in a company that is discredited. How many of you from DEC? You know, remember those days? You know, you had 15 years of experience of DEC and then you're on the job market? It's not going to help you. Or some of you have problems where you've stayed too short in companies, and that's a problem. How do you deal with that? So there's a whole chapter about that in the book. It's called Navigating the Waterfall. So Many of the other things that we're going to be talking about today are also in the book. So the first thing we're going to talk about is to respect the circadian rhythm. What is the circadian rhythm? Here's a hint. It is not the latest dance in Brazil. What's the circadian rhythm? What is it?
Biological clock, your sleep cycle.
Exactly. It's your biological clock. So here's what I find with many of my job candidates. I don't have to go to work in the morning. And I heard Steve Colbert is really funny. So I'm going to watch The Late Show. I haven't watched The Late Show, so I might as well watch The Late Show. And then there's a movie I've always wanted to watch afterwards. And then there's Game of Thrones. You know, I may be up until 2 o'clock, but what the hell? I don't have to get up in the morning. I could sleep until 10 o'clock. How many of you have ever had that? Okay? So what happens? You do that 3 days in a row. How many of you have done that 3 days in a row? And so what you've done is you're starting to program your biological clock. And then suddenly it becomes very comfortable to sleep to 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, to get up at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. And many of us, it's just fine. The problem is once you start doing that and you program your circadian rhythm, you're out of the rhythm of business. Because everybody else is asleep at a certain hour. They're going to get up at 5:30 so that they can get to the meeting at 7:30, 8 o'clock, or 8:30. So you're out of the rhythm. That could be a problem for you. That could be a problem for you. Let me give you an example. I tell my clients, you do not want to have a job interview at 2 o'clock. You do not want one at 2:30. You do not want one at 3 o'clock. Why? Can anybody tell me why?
It's the after lunch dip.
After lunch dip. It is universal. It is universal. In London, we call it tea time. In the United States, it's called a coffee break. If you live in Atlanta, it's a Coca-Cola break. In Purchase, New York, it's called a Pepsi break. But around 2 o'clock, your body's digesting the dinner that you had at 12, and there's this emotional low. So I could be interviewing you at 2 or 2:30, and I'm saying to myself, I'm not feeling a lot of energy from this guy. But if I interviewed you at 4 o'clock, I might feel more energy from you. It's not about you, it's about me. My clock is down. So the point is there are certain times a day you want to be interviewed, certain times a day you don't. You want to be interviewed 8:30, 9 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock. You want to be interviewed around 4:30. Those are good times. You do not want to be interviewed at 2 or 2:30. If your circadian rhythm is out of whack, you don't have a sense of what the other person's rhythm is like. So the important lesson here is you may be out of work, but it's important that you stick to a regular schedule, a sleep-wake schedule. Any questions about this or any reactions or how does this relate to your own lives? Anybody? Yeah?
I read that research has even shown that judges in the judicial system give harsher sentences in that dip period of the afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're tired and they're
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So respect the circadian rhythm. Respect yours and respect other people's. And if you want to, if you insist on watching a movie, just tape it, DVR it. How many of you are getting about 6 hours of sleep a night? Look at all the hands around here. Okay, you're in trouble if you're getting 6 hours of sleep. Your body is designed to have 7 to 9 hours of sleep. If you've got 6 or less, that's not a good sign. I want you to think about this. If you believe in Darwin, if you believe in the evolution, what's the evolutionary value of sleep? You think about a bird, think about a small animal, a squirrel. It's when it's asleep, it's totally helpless. And another animal could just grab it. You would think that if there's an evolutionary concept, some animal would have evolved over the thousands of years to not require sleep, because that animal that doesn't require sleep could devour every other animal. It hasn't happened. The question is why? There must be some evolutionary need that sleep has, why it is preserved, even though sleep is a very dangerous thing to do, particularly if you're in the woods. Scientists believe they've come up with a reason. They're experimenting with rats, and what they find is when the rats are in a very deep REM sleep, there is a liquid that washes over the brain and cleanses out the toxins that accumulate during the day in the brain. This has profound implications, because we know that there is an association between lack of sleep and senility, dementia, Alzheimer's. It has always been assumed that poor sleep habits are a symptom of Alzheimer's. Now they're beginning to think maybe it's a cause of it. So the brain is programmed to require somewhere between 7 and 9 hours of sleep. Now, I knew when I graduated from college and I was 22 and 23, I could work very effectively on 5 and 6 hours of sleep. If there's anybody in this room who's 22 years old, please disregard anything I just said. But if you're older than that, your body needs 7 to 9 hours of sleep. And if you're not doing that, something's wrong. If you're not doing that, you may be essentially cognitively like somebody who's consumed 2 glasses of wine. You know, you do. If I consume 3 or 4 glasses of wine, I'm impaired. But if I do 2, I don't. You know, I'm feeling okay, but there's part of me that is impaired. And when you're getting 6 hours of sleep, you're in that situation. The important thing is you want to get a regular pattern of sleep. Now, how do you do that? First thing, how many of you have had children? Okay, so, and those of you who had children, remember when you had children, did you have your children go through these bedtime rituals? You know, every night you do a certain thing, and maybe there was this little teddy bear, and maybe you would read to the kid, and there would be this regular routine. How many of you would do that? All right. What's your routine? Do you have a bedtime ritual? Do you go to bed when the spirit moves you, or do you go to bed at a certain time? One is you should go to bed at a certain time. Work the clock backwards. What time do you need to get out to bed in order to get up to have somewhere between 7 and 9 hours of sleep? Let's say 8 hours. Figure it out, put it on your calendar, and go to bed at that time. Second is, what is your routine? What is your rituals? You did this with your children. Why don't you do this with yourselves? What is your routine? I'll tell you what you shouldn't do. I've done this for 6 months, and it's a disaster. How many of you watch CNN before you go to bed? I mean, that is nuts. That'll guarantee you can't sleep. Tells you how crazy Donald Trump is, how crazy Kim Jong-il is, and guess what? Can you sleep? You know, I mean, you just don't want that. Whatever you want to do, if you're going to read something that keeps you relaxed. Don't look at the news, right? You need the right bedtime rituals. Suppose you wake up in the middle of the night. How many of you wake up in the middle of the night? Okay, fine. It happens. If you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't get to sleep, please do not use your bedroom and your bed as the place where you toss and turn. Get out of the bedroom, get out of the bed, find another chair, have a glass of warm milk, water, nothing alcoholic, and read a dull book. Read a dull book. You know, like, I mean, if it's 2 in the morning, you can't sleep, and you pick up a John Grisham novel, you're not going to be able to go back to sleep. I find Agatha Christie's great for me. There's a whole category of cozy British murder mysteries. And you can go to Amazon.com and it's a category, cozy mystery, and it's Agatha Christie's kind of stuff. And you know somebody's going to die, but they deserve to die, so it's okay. And you know, in the end, it's all going to be okay. And so you have that cozy feeling. You're in an enclosed place. It's like a little British village. It's snuggly. It's a great place to read, and until you get tired, then you go back to bed and go to sleep. But don't try to sleep while you're if you're wide awake. Get out of bed. Any other questions or any other tricks that you use to help you sleep? Yes, ma'am.
Bible begats. Bible begats. I can't last a page.
What's it called?
The Begats in the Bible.
Oh, the Begats?
Yes, I don't remember the book.
I'm so glad you're saying that in church. That's good.
I listen to meditation music or ocean waves.
I do too. That's my ritual. I really splurged and I got myself one of those really good Bose little speakers and put it right next to my bed, and I've got an MP3 player and I play Ocean Waves, and I just find that it's very nice. Also in the winter, particularly in the winter, listening to Ocean Waves, listening to running water is very nice and relaxing. Listening to bird music is very nice and relaxing in the winter.
That's how I got myself through college. I did all my reading before either sleeping or long drives. Anything that was mindless, it would go right in the subconscious mind.
Yeah.
So anything you do right before you go to sleep just easily goes in the subconscious mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have a different question. If you're 60 or over, do you still need the 7, 8, 9 hours?
Yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah.
The answer is yes. And again, a lot of this is about habit and routine. Just like you did with your children, you would put them into bed at a certain time. You'd have a certain ritual that you would go through. You need to do that to yourself.
And if you're trying to learn something, if you get a sufficient amount of sleep, it's been empirically shown, you retain more information than if you don't.
That's right. That's right. You're absolutely right. Again, the issue about sleep that makes it so important is you are not aware of how incapacitated you are when you don't have enough sleep. Yep.
I've heard that you shouldn't look at screens for an hour before bed, like iPad, TV, anything that with a flickering screen, because that engages your brain.
I've heard that too. The question is, she heard that you're not supposed to look at things with flickering screens, like an iPad. And I've heard that too. Certainly, a computer screen is probably not the coolest thing. So that may be physically something in there that keeps you up. Yep.
Hi. In response to that, also, I had a doctor tell me that the blue light in the computer will change your sleep patterns. But so what they recommended, because I've been reading at night on my tablet, is to get an application that's a blue light dimmer. And there's a bunch of them. And you can put it really low, and it's under the levels, and it shouldn't affect your sleep pattern.
Okay, a blue light dimmer.
So if it's good on a Nook or anything like that.
Sir?
Two things. The new Mac OS operating system has a built-in function to do that for you, to change the light.
Okay.
Second, I found that Boston Globe Sunday crosswords are excellent to have near the bed.
Boston crossword puzzles are also a good thing. But again, get yourself into a habit and get yourself into a ritual. Remember, most of you have spent the majority of your adult lives working. And the nature of work, like that picture of the person in the kayak, is you've got a calendar. and the calendar is full of things. And you know exactly what you're going to be doing at every hour of the day. And so you're, for better or worse, whether you like it or not, your life is programmed. Suddenly you're out of work and all of a sudden the calendar's blank. If you don't fill it in, who does? Nobody. You have to be the one to fill it in. And part of it is to create your own standards when you're going to bed, when you're going to get up. But you got to focus on 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Figure out what's good for you, but 6 hours is not enough. Any questions, comments, concerns?
Okay. As I reach the senior age,
yeah,
that I noticed that that any alcoholic beverage in the evening affects sleep.
Yes.
It doesn't seem to affect when you're younger as much, but it seems like when you're older.
I was able to do a lot more things when I was younger. Yes.
Avoid alcoholic beverages before bed. But.
Yep. Yeah, it is not necessarily the case that the drinking alcohol before bedtime is going to make you relaxed. It could actually do the reverse. So let's talk about exercise. How many of you have a regular exercise routine? Okay. How many of you don't? Okay. So if you don't schedule exercise, the likelihood is you're not going to do it. It's important to make the exercise a regular part of you. Put it in your calendar. I got myself an Apple Watch. I originally got it for all the wrong reasons, because I wanted to appear cool, and I thought I could buy my way into being cool. You know what? It doesn't work. I'm still not cool. But one of the things I do find with the Apple Watch, which is very good for me, is that there is a program, and I didn't even know I had turned on the program, but in random times, it will ping me and say, time to get up. You know, stretch, or breathe deeply, or you've been sitting too long, get up. I find I need that, because I can get up in the morning and I can sit down and I can turn on my computer, and then I get into computer land. And then 4 hours later, I go, what the hell just happened? Where did the time go? And if I don't get up, who's gonna tell me? Well, my Apple Watch is gonna tell me. But remember, in your business life, you had an office or a cubicle and you constantly were interrupted. You probably never had 20 minutes of uninterruption without something going. Now, all of a sudden, you're at home doing a job search and you have a complete no interruption. That's actually not good for you. You need to program some interruptions. I'll tell you something that I've done, good or bad. I went to Planet Hollywood, Planet Fitness rather, and there's a difference. And I signed up for Planet Fitness, $10 a month. Plus, I'm on a Blue Cross, you know, I've got a Blue Cross Blue Shield program. They actually pay me the $10 a month during the year. So my net cost is zero. And so it gives me a place to go, and for an hour, I've got all this exercise equipment, particularly as the weather is going to get colder. I find that's a useful, it gets me out of the house, it's part of my regular schedule, I get to exercise, and that's good for me. Plus, it doesn't cost me anything. So what's the downside of that? So you might want to check to see if there is a gym near your home. Check your health insurance to see if your health insurance will pay for part or all of gym membership. Of course, good intentions are very nice, but they're not going to achieve results. Part of the value of you being here in this group is that you help each other. And how many of you, when you were in kids in camp, you had a buddy in the water? Remember the buddy system?
Oh yeah.
So maybe you need a buddy on the exercise. A buddy to go to gym with you, a buddy to jog with you, a buddy to walk with you. Just don't do it on your own. Remember, in your work world, you were accountable to someone. Now you're not accountable to, now who are you accountable to? Well, your spouse maybe, but it may be helpful to have a buddy so you've got someone to be accountable to. In exercising, it is very important that you do bashing. If you remember when you had children and your child got frustrated, what did your kid do? Make a fist and then punch the pillow. That's what the kids do. How many of you remember your kids doing that? Okay. Maybe the kids are telling you something.
Or
they punch each other.
Right.
But when you observed your little kids doing that, maybe your kids are telling you something. That maybe that release of energy and just beating the shit out of something is very useful when you feel frustrated. So jogging is very nice, riding a bicycle is superb, but don't forget, it's good to beat the shit out of something when you are frustrated. Now, beating the shit out of something could be as elegant as a racquetball. If you don't want to be elegant, you can do what I do. I have a tennis ball, I have a tennis racket, and I go to the local schoolyard when the kids are out of session, and I have tried so many times to knock the brick building down without any success. But the process of just whacking that ball is very good for me and be very good for you. Yep?
What I did, I learned from my personal growth training, I made a bataka. B-A-T-A-K-A, and it's a pole wrapped with foam and taped off, and I can beat the crap out of a bed.
Yes.
I think you can buy them on Amazon too.
That's a great point. You can buy those things on Amazon. You can also get if you want to be elegant about it, you can get a punching bag, or one of these punching balls, so you can hit the ball and it'll just go around the thing and come back. But the idea of this is a job search is a frustration exercise. And you don't feel you're in control. You feel other people in control of things that are important for you. You need some way to an outlet for that frustration. Another good thing, particularly with weather like this, I have a softball and I have a bat, and I'll just throw the ball and whack that ball. And it feels so good when I connect. So think about some bashing that you can do. Anybody else have any ideas that you do or that's been successful? Yep?
Well, I actually found, and this has nothing to do with job searching, but there's an inverse relationship between the car I'm driving and my skiing method. If I'm driving a boring car, I ski very aggressively.
Yeah.
If I drive aggressively, I ski very lightly.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Hey, very interesting. Do not try bashing when you're driving, please. Okay, why don't you kind of stand up? Stand up and stretch. You've been sitting too long. Stand up and stretch. All right, stop it. You look like you're having too good a time. Stop. Okay, sit down. Again, that's another thing. You want to program just opportunities to change the pace. You don't want to be sitting for an hour. It's not good. Not good for your back. It's not good for your knees. You want to keep changing the pace. Again, you don't need to buy an Apple Watch. You can go to any store that will sell an egg timer, and an egg timer will do just fine. Most executives, according to research, have attention spans of 20 minutes. Which means that for 20 minutes they can really focus. If it's longer than 20 minutes, they actually you reach the law of diminishing returns. And I'm sure you've worked for executives who had less than 20 minutes attention span, right? But we all have a certain attention span. I can really focus very well for 45 minutes. But beyond 45 minutes, the law of diminishing returns applies. Think about you. What's your attention span where you can really focus? And then buy an egg timer, or if you got one of those digital stopwatches, program it to count down so you interrupt yourself. Yes, sir?
Got a phone?
Yeah, a phone.
A timer.
Yeah,
every phone has a
vibrate. Every phone will have a timer on it. Yeah. How many are you living with young children in your home? Could be grandchildren, children. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this. Here's what's very typical with the job candidates that I work with when they're very upset, they're very nervous, but they don't want to infect the children. And so they say, everything's okay, don't worry, Dad's going to be home a little bit more, it's not going to be a problem, don't worry. So they don't want to talk about it. Of course, this husband and wife will be talking about it a lot in private when the kids are not there. It's actually not a good thing. The problem is, particularly, how many of you have kids that are teenagers in the house? Okay, so here's the thing with children, particularly teenagers. They are so acutely aware of bullshit. They can spot it a mile away. They know when you're not being genuine. So they have this gift that they can do that. The problem is, they also lack perspective. So they can tell that you're bullshitting. You really are worried. You're saying you're not worried. You really are worried. The problem is, the attribution they make is, because they're so caught up with themselves, they ascribe your nervousness to them, to something that they may have done. You know, you're nervous because of something I did. So they can tell you bullshit a mile away, but they make the wrong conclusions. If you tell them, I'm nervous because I just lost my job, and I'm nervous about that, you may find that your kids are saying, whew, because your employment is an abstraction. It has nothing to do with them. So it's the other thing is that, you know, you do have a role. Yes, you have a role to find a job, but you also have a role to be a role model for your children. Now, you know, sometimes shit does happen. And I'm glad to be here with you during the fun times, but let's talk about how do we deal with the non-fun times, because it's going to happen in your life too. You are a role model in good times, and you're a role model in bad times. Might as well deal with it. So sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. But again, you may find that the kids, and I've found with the clients that I'm working with, when the parents say, we're going through stress, here's the stress we're going through, here's what's going on. Some of the older kids, particularly 16, 17, 18 years old, they say, you know, maybe I don't need to take the spring break in Miami, maybe I'll stay home. It's their way to make a contribution. It's a small contribution, it may not make a difference, but for them, they're making a contribution, they want to help. And it's a great learning experience for them. So I understand being out of work is not what you wanted, and it's an unhappy experience, but still it can be a learning experience for you and your grandchildren. Don't put on a happy face to your kids because they can smell your bullshit. This is, again, if you have children, this is a technique that I heard from a legendary psychologist named Abraham Maslow. I've used it myself. It is wonderful. It really works. I have a little fireman's hat. It looks like that. I bought it at a toy store. And I told my little kids, this is my hat of invisibility. So when I'm wearing this hat, I want you to pretend that I'm not in the room, that I'm invisible. And the kid goes, Okay, if you want to play that, okay, I can go with that. That is a great thing to do, because the nature of the job search work is that you're sitting behind a desk, and to a child it looks like you're not doing anything. You're quietly looking at a computer screen. But you may actually be very involved in something, and then the kid comes in, interrupts you, and you have a negative reaction, or you glare at the kid, and the kid attributes the glare to, "You don't like me." Whereas if you wear the hat of invisibility, the kid just ignores you, and that's fine. So it really works out.
I have heard of an engineer who pulled his shirt tail out, and it was never something discussed, but everybody knew if that shirt tail's out, tomorrow would be better.
very cool. But again, buy yourself some hat that you normally would not wear on the outside, and it is only used for that purpose. Any questions on this? Okay. Writers get results. You are going through a stressful time. You want a way to deal with that stress. One of the best ways you can deal with that stress is to create yourself a diary, a daily diary of what you're doing. So here's the example. An outplacement firm divided their candidates into three groups. And all the candidates were kind of from the same large company. They all had the same kind of backgrounds. One did it the usual way, which is you don't write a diary. The other did a diary, but it was more like the mileage log for the tax people. You know, just, you know, at 9 o'clock I went to the job search group. You know, it was just the facts. The third group did the diary, the facts plus how they felt about what was going on. Typical diary that a teenager might do. And then they looked 3 months later at the job search statistics. The ones that actually had a diary with their feelings got jobs quicker and had a better attitude towards their job search than the ones that didn't do a diary or did a diary and just had dates but not feelings. Why is that? Well, again, how many of you have had or have adolescent girls? And how many of your adolescent girls, when they were adolescents, had kept diaries? Okay, it's very typical for adolescent girls to do. It's a very healthy way to you've got all these feelings bottled up and you need to get them out. And it's, you don't know who to talk to, so you put it on paper. The legendary president, Harry S. Truman, did the same thing. When he was frustrated, he, instead of lashing out, he would just write down his thoughts, his feelings, his emotions, and then he would put it in a file cabinet and forget about it. Now that's a big difference between him and Donald Trump, right? But after Harry Truman died and they were going through his papers, they found that he had dictated an executive order for the United States to go to war against the Soviet Union. He was just pissed, and he wanted to, I just want to destroy the Soviet Union. And so he declared war on the Soviet Union, put out a whole executive order declaring war, and put it in a file, and then closed the file door and forgot about it. Very, very healthy thing. And again, I'm not being political. I'm just taking my role as a psychologist. What Donald Trump is doing is not healthy at all. You know, you're entitled to your feelings. You're not entitled necessarily to express it to anybody. Who else writes diaries? Well, it turns out a lot of very famous and successful people have written diaries, ranging from Bob Dylan, Buckminster Fuller, Anne Frank, of course, is the famous diarist, Che Guevara, Marianne Faithfull, Alec Guinness, Ronald Reagan was famous for writing diaries. Theodore Roosevelt, Andy Warhol. So this is not bad company. and I suggest you join them. Start writing a diary of your thoughts, your feelings, not just what you're doing, but what you're feeling. Any questions, comments, concerns? Anybody?
Send the president your book.
How to get a job? I don't think he reads, no. Now, my final is my inspiration. Years ago, we got the opportunity to take a vacation to Mazatlan, which is a beautiful town on the coast in Mexico. And we had a suite. And the living room overlooked the ocean. It was just beautiful. And the bedroom overlooked a river that flowed into the ocean. Very nice. And I would get up in the morning, and at 7:30, there was an old Mexican fisherman with a net. And at 7:30, he would begin throwing the net into the river and then reeling it in. And if there was a fish, he would take the fish out and put it into his bucket. Never once did I see him smile. Then he would take his net, throw it in the water, reel it up the net, and if there's no fish there, he never had any reaction. He would just take his net, throw it back in, and he would do that from 7:30 until 9 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, he would stop, go home. And then next day, I saw him again, the same spot, 7:30 to 9, he would do the same thing. Never had any emotional reaction to anything he was doing. He was totally doing the physicality of fishing without the emotionality associated with it. And I thought, that's a remarkable guy. And I find the successful job candidates that I work with are like this Mexican fisherman. You're putting in your time, you're going to networking meetings, you're meeting new people, but you keep your emotions very low-key. If good things are happening, don't react positively. And if bad things are happening, don't react negatively. Always, it's like you're the Zen master of job search. Because if you don't take the Zen master or the Mexican fisherman approach, what happens is anytime something vaguely good happens, you're going to be happy too out of proportion. Oh my God, Apple called me. Oh, this is... And then in the inevitable frustration, you'll be too negative about it. So you're best off having the image of a fisherman in Mexico throwing the net in. If something comes, no reaction. If something doesn't come, no reaction. But you put in your time, and then you go home. And I find that's a powerful and useful image. Yes, ma'am.
So, hi, I'm Emily. I run customer success. How do you do that if that is not your nature?
Right.
So, like, what are some techniques?
How do you do that?
How do you go from, because I'm kind of a...
Okay.
How do you get to the
question is how do you do that when it's not your MO? So I'm going to tell you a little story. Did you ever see or read Hamlet?
Yes.
How many of you saw or read Hamlet or know the story? So there's a very climactic scene. Again, Hamlet is about plays within plays within plays. It's about theater. It's about acting. And there's a climactic scene where Hamlet is confronting his mother, and he says, you know, you're sleeping with a guy who murdered your husband. You're sleeping with a guy who murdered my father. And Hamlet's mother breaks down and says, oh my God, you're right, you're right. I'm nothing but a whore. What should I do, Hamlet? And Hamlet says, okay, tonight, don't sleep with him. Pretend you're not a whore. And she goes, okay, what do I do tomorrow? Pretend you're not a whore. What do I do the next day? Pretend you're not a whore. And by keeping pretending you're not a whore, maybe you won't be one. And the point is, I know you have an MO. I know you have a personality. But you also have a set of behavioral habits that you picked up over the years and that you're very comfortable with. And you're not going to change overnight. But the issue is, you can act. You can pretend. You can go through the behavioral things. You can fake it. And if you fake it long enough, you can become it.
I want to say I'll stop being a whore.
Not going to get into that. This is a Methodist church. Just, we're only talking about... we're going to focus on job search. But the idea is... There's a woman named Amy from Harvard Business School. She has a very popular
Amy Cuddy.
If you haven't seen it, it's a wonderful a piece on
Wonder Woman Power Pose.
Yeah. It's a TED Talk. Write this down. Amy Cuddy, Cuddy, TED Talk. It's like one of the most powerful and popular TED Talks around. But it's basically fake it until you become it. And again, part of us is personality, but part of it is simply behavioral habits. When I started this talk, I showed this image of a kayak in calm waters. We all have our behavioral habits that become part of us, and we know how to kayak in a certain way, we know how to hold our body in a certain way, and it works for us, and then suddenly you're in the waterfall, and then you got to change your behavior, and that's hard, but the way you do it is you fake it.
So that's just the opposite of bashing and not bashing?
No, it's about behavior. It's the issue that where I'm recommending is, don't wait until you're motivated. Don't wait until the spirit moves you. Do it. Schedule it. Even if you're not motivated to do it. Just, it's about behavior. It's not about intentions. And if, like Hamlet, if you keep doing it, then eventually it becomes a habit, and then it becomes natural. And that's Amy Cuddy's point of view. You fake it until you become it. Pete?
On the subject, one of the best things that I have seen recently was a speech given by a commander, Navy SEAL.
Okay.
And what he said was, you can change the world if you get up every morning and you make your bed.
Yep.
Okay. Why do the military want you to do that? Because at least you will have accomplished something for the day. No matter what else happens in your day, when you come back at the end of the day, your bed will have been made. And it's done correctly. I have been saying that to my grandchildren for years. And now I finally have somebody that I can use as a proof statement.
Yeah.
And guess what? I did this with one of my grandchildren out in California, and I said the same thing to her siblings, and the next morning, she had her bed made, not her siblings. I took a $5 bill out of my wallet and handed it to her in front of her siblings. I said, "You made your bed." They came to visit me this summer, okay? Guess who's still making her bed? She got up and she said, "Papa, I made my bed." I reached into my wallet, gave her a $5 bill. So it works.
Yeah.
You can change your behavior.
If
you
do something... I made my bed this morning.
I'm all out of $5 bills.
Yeah, your wife is still in it.
There's a reason that the Nike swatch says, just do it. Activity, doing something, is better than doing nothing or waiting around for something to happen. If you've got a fear, you overcome it by doing the fear anyway.
Right. And again, I'm very much a behaviorist. It's what you do, it's what you say that counts, it's not what your intentions are, it's not about what your fears are, it's just what you do. So, in conclusion, we all develop behavioral habits over the years. You have developed work behavioral habits over the years that have worked extremely well for you, and it's like the kayaker on a smooth lake. And then suddenly, you find yourself going over the waterfall, and you just don't, either you don't know what to do, or the behavioral habits that have worked for you in the past are not working for you now. So we are talking about some new sets of behaviors to do. One is to respect circadian rhythm. The world works to a certain rhythm at a certain time. You want to stay in that work zone. Go to bed at a certain time, get up at a certain time. Fill your calendar with things to do. Second is you want to, sleep is very important. The body is designed for you to have 7 to 9 hours of sleep, not 6 hours. So again, you want to create 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Go to bed at a certain time. Have rituals just like you did with your children. Avoid bright lights. Avoid disturbing news and announcements. Find something soothing and quiet to read. If you get up in the middle of the night, go out of the bedroom, go out of your bed, read something quiet and relaxing, and then when you get tired, go back to bed. Don't make a big deal out of it. Your body will tell you when it's time to go to bed. In communicating with your family, remember, if there are children in the household, they have this bullshit indicator. They know when you're bullshitting. However, they don't have the cognitive ability to know it's really not about them. They can spot your bullshit a mile away, but they cognitively think anything that's upsetting you has to do with something that they did, because they're very narcissistic. So you want to, this is a teaching moment for them as well. Write a diary, which includes your thoughts and feelings as well, and keep the diary, and you don't have to show it to anybody. The idea is get it out. And then finally, have a model in your head about this whole job search. The model that I want to leave you with is the Mexican fisherman coming in at 7:30, fishing until 9 o'clock, and being the Zen master during the whole process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.